Okay, so good morning. Apologies for the delay in getting started. For those who weren't here, somebody mashed the pins on the VGA cable again, so this had to be straightened. For those of you who are here, I'll be sitting down for the lecture. I'm not feeling overly wonderful. So we'll try and get through this in good order, but from a seated position. And so what I'd like to do today is wrap up with GSM and then have a quick look at some aspects of 3G technology. So, last time we wrapped up on our cellular design, so the time before we'd sort of looked at the geometry of cellular networks and noted that sort of the required reuse distance or ratio of reuse distance to cell radius was dependent on the signal interference ratio needed. And so that would define, again, the geometry of your cellular layout. And if you had a certain number of channels available, we would spread those evenly among the cells. And that would give you the channels available per cell in the system. Last time, then, we moved on to look at traffic engineering. And again, this is sort of a fundamental queuing statistical result, which relates the number of channels you have available, also called trunks, the usage of the system as measured in Erlangs, and the probability of blocking or the grade of service. Okay. And the observation there was you can usually have a lot more customers then you have channels, you know, depending on how the customers are going to use the system. Generally, they won't be sort of on all of the time, but only a fraction of the time. Okay, and so we saw how, sort of, again, how many customers we thought we could accommodate that way. So we concluded that the lecture then talking about techniques to improve the capacity in the system. And we could play around with how we allocated channels, so they don't have to be sort of, again, allocated uniformly, but if certain cells were more congested, potentially they could get more channels, and this could be done either in a fixed way or in some sort of dynamic way as usage changed. And then this had implications for CDMA systems with cell breathing. So you would sort of expand or contract the size of your cell to take in more or less users, or actually more to keep the number of users fixed and manageable. And then for orthogonal systems, we noted that we could change the architecture of the systems a bit, using either cell sectoring, so antennas which were pointed outwards from the center of the cell in a specific direction, or microcell zones, which had the same idea, but pointed the antennas inwards from the edge of the cell, inwards. And so, in either of those cases, the use of directional antennas reduces the amount of interference that's going to be experienced in a cell. With cell sectoring, the channels were sort of, again, divided amongst the sectors, so you sort of got mini cells, mini sectors. With microcell zones, the channels could be sort of allocated on an as-needed basis, so it was a more flexible allocation of channels. We then went on to have a look at GSM. And we said this is a 2G system, and what that means is that it is a digital system. 1G would have been analog voice transmission, but it is connection-oriented and pretty much voice-oriented. Okay. But it's the foundation for a lot of the systems that are still in existence, and a lot of the basic concepts are still the same or similar, so it's not a bad place to start with having a look at how these systems are set up. Now, books upon books upon books are written about this. Again, reams of standards apply to this, so we've just hit upon some of the major features of these sorts of systems. And in particular, we looked at the architecture, and so we said there were three primary subsystems, of which we concentrated on two. The base station subsystem, which again is in charge of providing the radio link between the mobile user and the main network, and the switching subsystem, which then would provide the interface between this radio link and the core network, and so from the wireless network to then a wired back end. And the operations management center, which is responsible for sort of higher level management, billing, things like that. And we started to look at the radio link aspects of the system, and what we observed that there is a reasonably complicated channel structure where channels were used for various purposes, either the transport of data or the control of the system, the setting up of the links. And we said there was a distinction between logical and physical channels, where a physical channel was a time slot with possibly a specific encoding or burst structure, and then the logical channels denoted what purpose the physical channels were put, and the logical channels were mapped to sort of specific physical channels within a frame structure. Okay, and this gave us our time hierarchy. where you start with a burst, which goes into time slots, which are grouped into frames, then sequences of frames are grouped into multi-frames and super frames, etc. So, today we're going to wrap up our sort of discussion of GSM. We're going to look at a few more issues to do with the radio link, and then just then overall sort of how connections are managed and controlled. We will then move on to 3G systems, which are now going to be no longer voice-oriented, but, well, if not voice-oriented, but packet-oriented as well. And we will take a look at that primarily as an evolution from this 2G GSM world. Okay. So, again, we're going to look at the transmission systems and a few aspects of the transmission system. So this harks back to the second lecture when we were looking at sort of general comms systems, and we'll be sort of looking at all those various aspects, but sort of specifically how does the GSM deal with them. Okay, so we had our basic comms model here, and somewhere along the line I lost my data going in there, but that's probably okay, because again, GSM primarily is handling voice with a few very specific services on top of that. And so we have the two radio systems involved. We've got the mobile equipment, and then we have the base transceiver, okay, base station transceiver. And we'll see again, they all have these basic components that we had for the radio system. We go from a microphone to an analog to digital conversion, speech coding, channel coding, interleaving, ciphering is encryption, formatting into the bursts that will need to be transmitted physically, and finally transmission. And on the other hand, you have reception, and equalization is sort of that is part of the mobile system. So that would be when you have multipath phenomena trying to sort of equalize or sort of deal with the inputs that you're getting from multiple paths. So de-encryption and then decoding of your channel. Okay. And a fairly similar view on the base station transceiver. The receiver, again, would be communicating with the mobile station, and so we'll take the what it gets from the mobile station, and the receiving part is actually receiving from the network, and it takes what it gets from the fixed network and translates it to the transmitter, then really doing well here. Okay, so the receiving part receives from the mobile station, decodes the signal, and forwards it on into the main network. The transmitter takes what it gets from the sort of main network and formats it so that it may be transmitted to the mobile equipment. So it takes what would already be a digital signal, but it formats it, encrypts it, encodes it into a format that can be received by the mobile equipment. Okay, so again, the speech coding techniques that are used by GSM are designed to transmit at a lower bit rate than our classic pulse code modulation that would be used in the wired telephony network. And basically it just uses a linear predictive coding scheme. The specific one it uses is regular pulse excitation, long-term prediction. And this is one of these model-based coding schemes. And so the information sent is not a direct encoding of the signal, but it's information about the tone and the filters that should be used. And each 20 milliseconds of speech can be represented using 260 bits. Okay. Additionally, the coder tries to detect when the user is speaking and when not, and won't transmit when there's no actual speech. Okay, so again, that saves on power, etc. And finally, a noise subsystem is used to sort of introduce background noise, which again will make the speech signal sound a little bit better. Okay. And altogether, this can get you down to 13 kilobits per second data rate. Okay. Now, channel coding, again, is used to try and detect and or correct errors. And again, I'm assuming that you have at least seen block coding, so Hamming, so CRC codes, something like that, even this. And so there's a lot of coding goes on with GSM. You know, less than half of the bits are actual data bits, with more than that of coding bits. And so the coding goes on in a number of stages, and the bits are segmented into very important bits and not so important bits. Okay, and where the very important bits are critical to decoding the signal at all. The important bits will give you quality, and the not so important bits, well, they give you additional quality, but not much. And so for the very important bits, block coding is used, and 3 redundancy bits are added. These very important bits plus the coding are then combined with the important bits, and a convolution code is used. And so a convolution code sort of works on encoding streams of bits. And for each bit, you have essentially a bit of overhead added as well. Okay. And so you have then these coded bits, which are combined with our not so important bits. So the combination of these codes can be used to correct and detect and in some cases correct errors. Okay. Now, the block coding it's a parity check, and it can't be used for correcting errors, so it's strictly used for detecting errors. And again, recall that this was applied to what were considered the critical bits for the sequence. And so if the block coding detects an error, then the whole segment of data is discarded. Okay, because if the critical bits are incorrect, then there's no point in going on. And in that case, you'll just interpolate between past and present signals, speech samples. The convolution code, again, is applied to the very important bits and the important bits, and then interleaved with the less important bits, and bits coded using the convolution code can be corrected. Errors can be corrected as well as detected. So ideally what would happen is if there is an error, then the convolution code would correct it, in which case the block coder would come up as being fine. If the errors were not corrected, so there was something still detected as a problem in the block coder after sort of the convolution code had been used to do error correction, then the block is discarded. Okay. Additional to this, interleaving is used and the purpose of interleaving is to guard against sort of block errors or sequences of errors. So possibly you might have a fade which would sort of eliminate a sequence of bits. And so if you use interleaving, then the bits in the sequence are not all associated with the same sort of portion of the block. So we have our 456 bits, which are representing our speech, and we break that up into 8 57-bit sublocks. And so each block carries data offset by 8. So you have 1, 9, 17, 2, 10, 18, etc. And so then when the blocks are transmitted, you are not sort of again getting sequential errors in the system, and non-sequential errors, again, you have a better chance of correcting. Okay. Additionally, the blocks are spread over frames. And so again, this gives you a time gap in the transmission of the blocks, so that if there was sort of a temporary problem, then hopefully that will be corrected. Okay. So in terms of modulation, GSM uses Gaussian minimum shift keying. And this gives you a compromise between spectral efficiency, the complexity of the transmitter. It's a relatively simple transmitter and fairly tight bandwidth. Okay, so just to contrast with regular phase shift keying, again, in the first graph, you see that the bandwidth is sort of more compact. And in the second graph, you see that depends on the factor used for the GMSK. Okay, so you can, again, tighten or relax that bandwidth. And again, there will be some issues with sort of the probability of error when you do that. But in general, again, it gives you a sort of a more compact signal than your phase shift keying. Okay, so sort of a few additional features. Frequency hopping is used. It's a slow frequency hopping that's used on a frame-by-frame basis. And again, it's used to try and find a good frequency, which is not being subject to fading. Okay. Multipath equalization is used, and again, if you have multipath effects and fading, then the training bits, so a signal is analyzed to try and determine exactly what those effects are, and then filters are used to try and compensate for those effects. Okay, so that's what we're going to say about the radio link. Now, our final topic is just on so how the network is managed and how connections are managed and controlled. Okay, and remember that this is a connection-oriented system, so these layers, when we talk about GSM Layer 3, it's not a networking layer, it's not the OSI model, it's referring to sort of how the connection is set up and managed and what tasks go along with setting up and managing connections. Okay. So What makes this complicated? Well, obviously this whole cellular setup and the fact that we are trying to manage a link between the mobile station or equipment and the base transceiver. And then again, that the data carried along that connection has to be translated back into the wired network. Okay. And so on top of just sort of the radio aspects of that, there are also a lot of issues having to do with mobility. So sort of connecting, registering, so connecting with the network at all, verifying that that connection is legitimate. Again, if you're in a house, you don't need to worry about authentication because the fact that you actually have a line means that you're authorized to use it. Here, again, somehow you have to verify that you're authorized to use the network. And of course, they want to know who you are to be able to bill appropriately. And as you're moving along, you need to track that and update locations. So it's not just setting something up initially and that's it, but as movers, as users move, they have to sort of, that has to be mapped to the cells and the network itself. Okay. And finally, you do have a number of services, so you have both voice and data communications, although again, the data communications for classic GSM is fairly limited to things like SMS. Okay. So, what we are looking at is sort of the signaling of the control messages that need to be sent to accommodate all of this. And these are broken up into a number of layers. The physical layer, so you're just setting up again that point-to-point radio connection. The data link layer, so transmitting data along that. And then the layer 3, which again is going to manage the full length of the connection between the user and the network. Okay. And that layer is broken up into sublayers. Yeah, having to do with managing the channels, managing mobility, and setting up the connection. Okay, so those layers apply all the way from the mobile station to the MSC. But again, as we said before, the interfaces are a lot different and the protocols required are different. Okay. So the mobile station is going to, again, connect via a radio link to the base station transceiver. And from there on, you'd have most likely a wired link, so the translation will go on from the BTS to the BSC to the MSC Okay. And so we see first of all that layer one and layer two, so you have the TDMA access on the radio link, and then that's translated into just a digital access on the wired links. And the point-to-point connection also varies slightly depending whether you're in the radio or wired link. And then the radio resource management happens between the mobile station and the BTS, but it's controlled by the MSC through BSSF's MAP. Okay, and then finally, the mobility management and the connection management, as you would expect, is an issue between the mobile station and the MSC. And yeah, it's really not an issue for the base station subsystem. Okay. And so we're not going to say a lot about layer one and layer two, but we're going to have a look at what goes on in this layer three. Okay, so the radio resource management controls the setup, maintenance, and termination of radio and fixed channels between the mobile unit and the MSC. And so again, it's setting up a radio link. And so it involves the mobile station, the base station subsystem, and the MSC. And you want to maintain and release links between mobile stations and the MSC. And the issues that would be involved there are channel assignment, sort of again, that's the basic connection, and that potentially has to be might be changed when the call is over. That has to be released. Handover has to occur, so keeping that link more or less even as you move from one cell to another. Frequency hopping, power level control, discontinuous transmission and reception, and timing. So again, all the physical aspects of the radio link and determining the parameters for those. Okay. And so one of the biggest ones would be handover. So again, it's relatively straightforward to pick a channel, but it's less straightforward how that changes as the user moves. And the goal is that we need to allow for a continuous connection as the user crosses cell boundaries. And there's a lot of signaling that goes on around that, and it does present a load for the network in and of itself. From a user standpoint, you have to do this quickly in order to so the user doesn't notice that it's going on. Okay. And for GSM, signal measurements are done in both uplink and downlink directions, and the mobile station actively participates in the handover and making the decision as to when to hand over. Okay, so there are four main types of handover. There's the intra-cell handover, and so you're changing a channel within a single cell. And so you might do that to optimize traffic load or to improve the connection quality. So if a certain frequencies experiencing fading. You can move potentially, even though you'll be connected to the same base station. Inter BTS handovers. So you're changing cells, but the cells are managed by the same BSC. Inter BSC handovers. So you're changing now your base station controller as well. And inter MSC handovers. So you're changing the MSC. And again, that's going to have a long distance implication. So the first two types of handovers are dealt with by the BSC in conjunction with the mobile station, and the second two are dealt with by the MSC. Okay. And so that just sums that up. So you can change channels within a cell, you can change cells, so that's 1-2. You can change your BS from one BSC to another, and again, the MSC has to be involved in that. And finally, you can change from one MSC to another. Okay, so that essentially, the radio resource management, again, is concerned with channel allocation and managing the radio characteristics of that channel. Mobility management is responsible for updating locations as the user moves, and registration security and authentication. Okay. And so location management is needed when the user first attaches to the network, so the network needs to know where they are. And then as they move, that this has to be updated. And when the mobile station powers down, then they have to be sort of taken out of that tracking. Okay. And the reason for this tracking is for paging. So if a call is made to the mobile station, then the network needs to know at least roughly where the mobile station is. And so it could be tracked on a cell-by-cell basis, but it's not, again, as we said before, tracked on a location area. So you have a number of cells in which the mobile station could possibly be. So again, just in terms of the numbers of the number of updates that need to be made and the amount of information that needs to be tracked, the location area is chosen to optimize that. Okay. And so, as we said before, the user's location is tracked through the home location register and the visitor location register. And the MS updates the visitor location register, the visitor location register updates the home location register, and then the home location register can communicate with the visitor location register to give the user's subscriber information. Okay, so in terms of authentication and security, well, there are techniques available to digital systems that would not be available to analog systems, mainly having to do with the coding and the encryption possible. And so if you have an analog system, you can't really encrypt it, but if you have digital, you can use encryption codes. Additional to that, initial access to the network is based on authentication of the user ID and anonymity of the users is provided by the use of temporary mobile user ID numbers, so that, you know, again, if you have somebody listening, they can't identify a specific user. Okay, the SIM card is used to handle authentication and security. And a number of encryption algorithms are used for different purposes. One's for authentication, A3, A5 is for encryption, and A8 is to generate an encryption key. At a higher level, the SIM is protected by a password or PIN number. And again, that information is not dependent on the equipment. It's contained in the card and can be moved from phone to phone. Okay. So the AUC communicates with the SIM card to perform authentication. The SIM and the AUC have to have a shared encryption key. And the equipment identity register is checked to make sure that the equipment has not been stolen. Okay. So we've talked about sort of managing the radio link, the channels, sort of connecting to the network and maintaining that connection. The final piece of the puzzle then is communication management. And so this is the establishment of, again, end-to-end links for the mobile user. And so, if you call a mobile or a mobile makes a call, then communication management has to be invoked. And if something happens to the connection, then call reestablishment has to happen. Okay, and it would also be managed calls primarily, but also other supplementary services, call forwarding, etc., or short or SMS management. Okay, and all of these functions, again, are handled by the MSC as opposed to the BSC. Which makes sense, since again the MSC is providing that access point between the core network and the access network. Okay, so that's all we're really going to say about GSM. The links here are. It can be quite interesting, I think. It's sort of gives you the full procedure for various call operations, so originating a call, terminating call, a handover, an inter-MSC, so different forms of handover. And if you go and look at them, what you'll see is that they show you from the layer, so the radio resource management, they'll show you which layer is being invoked, what messaging is occurring, and also what channels are being used at any step in this process. So it can give you, again, if you go through them, you'll see all these things we've discussed very abstractly and how exactly they fit together. Unfortunately, they don't exactly fit on a single computer screen, but it is interesting to have a look at it. So you should try having a look at that. So we'll break now, and when we return, again, we'll have a go through 3G systems and specifically UMTS and how we've evolved from our 2G GSM systems into systems that now handle data as a matter of course. So about 15 minutes and we'll return here and finish the lecture.